Hi, I'm Matt Stone. You're listening to Crucial Conversations, a series of five stories of grassroots leadership by people in the disability sector in Queensland.
So we arrived and a friend of mine had a bottle of champagne and some wine glasses at the house waiting for us to open a bottle of champagne as Cathy arrived.
We start this series with the story of Josie McMahon. Together with her twin sister Cathy, Josie grew up in a large family in rural Queensland until they were forced apart to live very different lives for over 47 years.
So Cathy's been out of Bailey now for 4.5 years.
This is a tale of strength, perseverance and courage. A tale of reconnection, love and how, with the help of friends and the right support, it's never too late for a second chance.
And I guess I also had to get to the point of believing it was possible to happen.
This is also the tale of a woman who was able to engage a broad network of people to work with her and Cathy. Josie would be the first to say she did not and could not have done this alone. There were many individuals and a number of organisations that influenced her thinking and supported her over the years. This episode challenges us to reflect on how far are we willing to go to create the change we think is needed, not only in the world around us, but also our own beliefs and actions.
I'm Josie McMahon, and I have a twin sister, Cathy McMahon. We come from a large family, and we were born in Miles in southwest Queensland in the mid-50s, but we were born 14 weeks premature, and we weren't expected to survive, so we were baptised immediately. And of course, Mum was only expecting to have one of us, so it was a surprise to find two of us. We've both got two older brothers, two older sisters, two younger brothers and a younger sister, so we're in the middle. I sometimes wonder how Mum coped. Dad was a drover, but we always had that new dress. Mum would make that new dress once a year. And we had good food, like the food came from the farm. Hello! We're here!
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
How are you,
Julie? So Cathy was born with cerebral palsy. So this is Cathy's space. Do you want to have a? Are you going to show?
Hamish, your house.
And she has an intellectual disability.
Your amazing house.
And she is.
It's an amazing.
So non-verbal.
This is Cathy's space here. And even at night time, it looks beautiful. She has these gorgeous lights up here that turn. And it's gone from like...
Mum would take her off to various appointments, Cerebral Palsy League in Toowoomba. And we always went to church every Sunday. That was kind of important. A mile down the road, it was a little Catholic community. She was definitely an important part of our, family. We worked out on the farm. We all had jobs to do. Cathy didn't do that. Well, she spent most of her time either on the floor crawling around on her hands and knees or outside on the stroller, or you might kind of take her outside and put her on the, on a blanket on the grass outside. That was kind of Cathy's life, really. I never passed an exam until I was in grade 6, so I only ever really got 10%, 20% or 30% at school. I saw myself as being really quite dumb. Before every exam, I'd go and spend time in the chapel and always say, God, maybe I don't deserve to pass this exam, but please make a miracle happen. I mean, I knew I couldn't see well because I couldn't see the blackboard and I kind of struggled with reading, but we didn't realise that I was legally blind until I was close to 40. And that we didn't realise that I actually had tunnel vision. After church, we used to go across the road to the shop and we had to cross the highway. And I remember someone singing out one day, "Get off the road!" I'd hate it if we were going to play cricket. I just loathed it. I used to love playing basketball because that was a bigger ball, or netball, so I could kind of see that. Yes, I think I was quite strategic in how I managed things to kind of get by. Whenever visitors came, "Oh, and how's Josie? And how's Josie's eyes?" And my sister would say, "Don't go out there now, they're talking about you." I didn't probably see myself even as having a disability. When Kathy was 11, a decision was made that she would go and live in an institution. The professionals, the doctors at the time, said, "Well, place Kathy in Bailey Henderson because she's better off with her own kind and, you know, have more children," which is, I guess, what Mum and Dad did. And the very first time I went to visit Kathy, I can still remember getting out of the car, and right in front of me there was this man that, I guess this, I can still remember his face and his teeth. And then we had to kind of go to this other part of the hospital where Mum had to report that she was coming in to see Kathy, and then go to the particular ward. And never really, you know, it was always clean, shiny floors, beds made. The smell, the noise, you know, a bit like a hospital, very much like a hospital. And I remember Mum always taking two packets of lollies down. And we'd share a packet there and then, and the minute Kathy saw Mum's handbag, she'd grab it because she always knew that there were lollies in the handbag for her. She'd be sitting there rocking and playing with her clothes. And if you know she rocks, you know that's a sign of distress, something's not quite right. How did she survive in Bailey Henderson for 47 and a half years? So I went to a country school, I think we're probably about 30 kids in the school, and it was during that year, grade 4 or 5, that we had a teacher that came to the school, and he took an interest. I guess he was shocked when he gave me an exam. So he actually took me aside and would spend many lunch hours with me, giving me extra tuition during lunch. So I kind of thought, well, actually, I'm not so dumb after all. And I do remember in school, at the end of grade 10, when we were asked whether we wanted to go on to senior, I kind of would put up my hand. And then the principal came to me one day and called me into the office. When again, after about the third time I put up my hand to say I'm going to do senior, came to me and called me into the office and basically said, "Josie, I don't think you should do senior. I think it's way beyond your level." I think I got away with going nursing because Mum was a nurse and she always wanted someone in our family to be a nurse. And when I come home and said, "Oh, I'm going to leave and go nursing," I always got fantastic ward reports at nursing, but there was always this sense they'd always have at the end of it, "But I think Josie would do better doing something else." And I think that it was often the medical profession just couldn't cope how I actually did things differently. Like, to see everything, I used to bring it up really close, like giving injections. I used to bring it up really close to see what I was doing. And so in those days, I never wore glasses. And when I look back now, I think, how did I manage to study? So I ended up having to give up nursing, and that was really very hard for me. They had actually offered that to keep me on as an enrolled nurse rather than being a registered nurse. Before I'd left the Mater, I had actually went down and saw the welfare officer, and she suggested that maybe I join the public service or apply for a cadetship in welfare, and I was actually accepted into the cadetship the following year. That took me down the road of doing welfare. So I studied at night at TAFE College and worked at the Royal Brisbane Hospital in the social work department as a social work assistant. So I did that for 2 years, a cadetship. Got a job in Townsville, and then that's where I ended up getting married and having children. And then close to 40, I decided I wanted to go back to uni to do study. Yeah, my husband wasn't very supportive. I was feeling very frustrated. I was kind of had my family, but I felt really extremely isolated because I couldn't drive. I had contacted someone who used to work at the Commonwealth Rehab Service, and they had said to me, "Oh, do you think we could help you?" And I said, I don't know. And she said, "Well, I think we could. I'll organise someone from the rehab unit to come out and have a conversation with you." And so I never really told my husband because I didn't really trust what was going on. So, and I could always predict that he would come home from work of a morning, be gone during the day, so I didn't have to kind of explain too much who these people were. So they came out, were interviewing me. At the end of the interview, he walked in and thought, "What's going on?" And I kind of made up some story to see me through. And they picked up all was not well with what was happening. And they then offered me support to go to uni to do social work. So when I went to Townsville to work, they had actually had me down as legally blind then, but they never ever told me. I was interested to know, I guess I wanted to know how much I could see. And so I went back to the same doctor, and he put it in a letter and sent it to me. And I was stunned when I read it. It was like, what? My mother came, and you know, who used to visit, and my husband at the time, and two of my older children. And the optometrist did this test to basically show them what I could see. Then they came home and were starting to treat me like I was really blind, move stuff out of the way, and oh, mum might trip, and mum might, like, and it was this really odd kind of thing. So I'm thinking, I think I prefer not to have a diagnosis, really. I was sitting in class, I can still remember, a Monday afternoon, and the lecturer was talking about people with disability coming out of institutions. And I kind of turned to the person beside me and said, "But they can't close institutions, because what will happen to my sister?" And she looked at me as if to say, "What do you mean, your sister?" Because I hadn't really talked with people about Kathy as part of who I really was. I went up to the lecturer and spoke about my story, and she said, maybe you need to go and talk to Julie at IAT, Independent Advocacy in the Tropics. And so I said, so-and-so sent me, said I should come and talk to you, that they're closing institutions and my sister's living in one. And she said, "What do you want me to do about it?" And I think I didn't really know, but that was the beginning for me at that point, that they were closing institutions.
This series is brought to you by CREW, the Community Resource Unit. Crew exists to create positive change so that people with disability will be welcomed, respected and appreciated in their communities. For more information, please visit our website at cru.org.au.
Cathy wasn't at my wedding when I first got married. Cathy was never at any funerals. And I suppose we hadn't kind of thought about whether she should be. The dean at the time, who was also a lecturer, she was the head of the department as well, she also said to me, I know someone else who might be really good for you to go and talk to, a woman who has low vision, who works at the Women's Centre. So I went in and spoke with her, who I was and where I was and a little bit about Cathy. And straight away she said to me, oh, you need to come on the board of IAT, which was Independent Advocates in the Tropics. I said, well, why? And she said to me, oh, we need someone like you. I said, what? So from then on, I joined the committee and I was in. And this committee was made up of some people who had lived in institutions and had come out. And so I was hearing all this bad stuff about institutions. I thought, these guys, they've lived there, they know. So it was that choice, well, what do I need to do about Cathy? The life that she was leading probably was not a good life and not a fulfilling life. And I can remember coming to visit Cathy at one time and starting to kind of question a lot more about what was really happening. And I remember the nurse at the time or someone telling me all the negative things about Cathy and raising issues around behaviour and lots of different things. And I thought, this isn't my sister. And in actual fact, when I even looked at Cathy, I'd hardly recognise her. And I just thought, if I don't get her out of here, she's not going to survive.
I shall not be moved like a tree that's standing by the water. I shall not be moved.
And I remember talking with the social worker at the hospital at the time, my concern about whether Cathy could be sexually abused. And she said, oh no, that would never happen in here. And I thought, no, I don't believe that. And at that stage, when I started to visit Bailey Henderson, there was also a move at Bailey Henderson to probably welcome families back in. So when we'd go, they'd always kind of have milk drinks for the kids and food, you know, biscuits or whatever there for the kids. But the kids wouldn't eat it. And I'd say, oh, why don't you have it? And the smell of the place would turn them off. It was a psychiatric hospital. Psychiatric hospital with three wards of people with an intellectual disability, one or two wards of people with acquired brain injury, a ward of people that had the dual diagnosis of intellectual disability and psychiatric disability. And so for Cathy, if she had have actually gone into Challoner or Basil Stafford, she would have actually got out of there back in the mid-1990s, they were looking at closing those, so she would have got out then. But because she was in Bailey Henderson, that was a mental institution, so it didn't come under institutional reform. So then also when they were closing psychiatric hospitals, she missed out because she had the diagnosis of an intellectual disability. So in some way, she was in the wrong, you know, in the wrong institution at the wrong time.
Like a tree that's standing by the wall, I shall not be moved.
So at this stage, I'd become part of the advocacy movement, and then I kind of became a manager of Gold Coast Advocacy. And in my first year at Gold Coast Advocacy, this report came across my desk around Bailey Henderson and an investigation that was happening into Bailey Henderson, the abuse and neglect of people. And I know that Kathy was in one of the wards that was being investigated.
The government should find means by which the Department of Family, Youth and Community Care can assume responsibility as soon as possible for the care of people with an intellectual disability now resident in Bailey Henderson Hospital. And in the meantime, the current use of medication regimes, the lack of allied health services and the absence of appropriately skilled staff should be rapidly addressed as a transitional part of the institutional reform process. In incident after incident, the results of this investigation have revealed actions towards patients which should never have happened. Not a few of them are individually scandalous, but we encountered a toleration, indeed rationalised justification, of this behaviour by staff colleagues and even senior members of staff, which is corporately scandalous, and a general lack of accountability for the material rights of the residents, which is in breach of government standards and ethical practice. Health Rights Commission. Report to the Minister for Health and the Parliament of Queensland on the investigations by Health Rights Commission at Bailey Henderson Hospital, Toowoomba, 1996.
But again, she was non-verbal. How do we actually know what's really happening for her? There were no other voices about it. Like, I might even go to meetings with the department and people would say, oh, but there's no people with intellectual disability living at Bailey Henderson. And I'd say, well, there is. I visited my sister the other day and those wards are still there. It was an advocacy organisation that had started and we went to them to kind of get a presence, to see if we could get an advocate who could, you know, just have a presence in the ward and start kind of doing some work with Kathy. They were very strong about the issues around people with mental illness, but for people in that ward with intellectual disability, they weren't particularly interested, because I was almost getting to the point of giving up, thinking, are we ever going to get her out? I think for me, though, a couple of things needed to happen for me. I think I needed to get to the point of actually believing that Kathy needed, that Kathy deserved to have a different life. And I guess I also had to get to the point of believing it was possible to happen. You know, that I kind of think I had hoped something might happen. You know, it was more of a hope rather than needing to be very intentional about doing something. And that she really deserved to have a different life. Maybe it was I didn't believe in myself enough that it was possible that I could actually make this happen. You know, I could make things happen for other people, but could I actually make it happen for my own sister?
No, I sense there's a problem here.
We went to the public advocate and raised the issue of people living in intellectual wards at Bailey Henderson and said, you need to put it on your agenda. And he actually spoke about that in his first report. Very naively, I did the interview with the Courier Mail and raised the issues. I went up to see Kathy on the Saturday, when on the day that had come out, and I actually hadn't seen the article, but was this animosity towards me from the staff. For the next 5 years when I went to Bailey, there was no way I was allowed in a ward. I'd have to go and visit Kathy in this particular section. Doors were closed on me.
I don't know if I can help.
I was seen as a difficult family member. You know what? I love it. I love actually being on that side of being a difficult family member. I felt that once you're seen as a difficult family member, you are actually on the right track, because you're wanting change for your family member.
And I...
Every deputation that was on with the minister, whether it was in Gold Coast or sometimes Brisbane or Toowoomba, I'd be there raising the issues around Kathy living in Bailey and that we wanted to do something different and we wanted to get her out. So people at high government levels knew Kathy's story and knew who I was.
God knows.
I miss you.
10 years ago, I did some very intentional planning for Kathy. It was a 6-day workshop with 5 other families, so 6 families with 2 or 3 facilitators. Did that very strong intentional planning about what, you know, for each of us. I mean, they were families that, you know, each of our situations were very different. I mean, I must say, interestingly along the way, I've kind of felt a little bit of that in some ways my situation has always been a little bit different because I haven't been the parent fighting for my child. I'm actually been the sister speaking up for my sister. And so, and in Queensland, that very little of that had been happening. I'd kind of sussed out kind of different support agencies on the coast and what we might need to do.
Josie hit many dead ends in her almost 20-year battle to find a home and funding package for Kathy. But finally, a course on designing disability services to meet individual needs led to a meeting with Lutheran Community Care's Trinity Disability Support Service in 2011. That in turn led to talks with social housing company Horizon Housing, and after a failed bid for federal funding, the Queensland Government became involved.
There could be 10 or so people being paid at these meetings. I'd be the unpaid person. And from meeting to meeting, things may not progress. And I mean, there'd be 2 years of these meetings happening on a regular basis. And I used to think, how much does this cost bureaucrats in just attending meetings and nothing's really progressing?
At 11:50 a.m. on May 16, Kathy, with Josie by her side, was driven out of Bailey Henderson Hospital for the last time. Says Lutheran Community Care's CEO Jacqueline Kelly, it takes a while to change paradigms, and tackling it from a different approach helps break through some of the traditional ways things have been done in the past. This is a great example, and I really hope to see more of it. Gold Coast Bulletin.
As it turned out, we had this house built and designed specifically for Kathy.
What are you doing in bed?
Hi.
What would your big brother say to you? Oh, sorry, Rishali. Oh, I'm missing you over there, sorry. What would your big brother say to you?
Okay, so this is on the day that we were moving Kathy, I kind of sent out I don't know how many text messages to people. We'd actually brought Kathy down to show her the house that she was would be living in as well. So we arrived and a friend of mine had a bottle of champagne and some wine glasses at the house waiting for us to open a bottle of champagne as Kathy arrived. So we did that. And this is 2 of Kathy's workers.
Hi, I'm Sharia.
With Shani and Barack.
So Kathy's been out of Bailey now for 4.5 years.
Come back. Yeah, there's some of us, yeah. So that was at one of our birthdays.
And her life looks very, very different.
And Kathy has she's kind of got a little deck off her area as well.
The position is fantastic because the pub's around the corner there. Senior sits is really close. Art's just kind of up there. You know, it's fair. Oh, church is kind of really, you know, so people know her out and about. When they're going out with Kath in the motorising, in the wheelchair, they have music going as well.
This podcast was funded by the Anne Cross Leadership Initiative. Established in 2017 to honour the contribution of Anne Cross to Uniting Care Queensland during her years as the Chief Executive Officer, this partnership between Uniting Care and CREW aims to contribute to the development of strong, principled leadership amongst people with disability and families throughout Queensland, in order to contribute to better lives for people with disability.
So instead of them seeing Kathy as, which what used to happen when we first come, Kathy would go out and they'd have some, like a blanket over her legs and all of this, and I've said, don't do that. It's like making her look like an old lady, and her hair was grey, and so when we took over that my staff could actually dye her hair and make her look so much more. And so she's gone from being my mother to being my sister now. it's just so different. Yeah, it's just fantastic.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
See ya. Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.